In 2008, Oshkosh attorney and Democrat Jessica King ran for the state Senate in the 18th Senate District and lost by 163 votes. But the outcome was different on Tuesday, August 9th. She beat Republican incumbent Senator Randy Hopper in a recall election, and she's joined us to introduce herself to Wisconsin Eye. Jessica, thanks very much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Congratulations, Senator-elect from the 18th. How does that feel?
It pinched me. It's still kind of new, actually. I mean, today is Thursday, so we have a lot of work in front of us, and I have to hit the ground running, and I'm really honored and proud to be elected by my home to be their public servant and their representative in the Capitol.
And your margin went up from a 163-vote loss in 08 to about 1250?
Yeah, approximately. Tuesday? You know, maybe it'll be give or take one or two when they get it done, but that's the unofficial number.
Okay. You know, Peg Lautenschlager, former Attorney General from Fond du Lac, once told me you have to meet Jessica King because she has such a compelling personal story. The election's over, so there's nothing to be gained from a political standpoint. I'm just intrigued. Could you give us a little bit about your personal story?
Well, I think it really springs from the basic question that quite a few people ask me, and they say, why do you want to be a politician? You know, why would anybody want to do that job with the kind of climate and polarization and things that I think people see right now, especially, you know, even with this last set of elections, seeing all the negativism and the real, really aggressive kind of nasty stuff that people yeah. equate with politics these days. Why would you want to do it? And it has a lot to do with my story. Both of my parents have been disabled my entire life. My dad is a disabled American veteran. He served in the Navy. And I, as a small child, was when either of them or both of them at certain points were sick. And so I actually ended up part of the foster care system as a small child. Oh. And then when I was 15, I became a ward of the state and actually moved out to Rosendale, to the rural part of my district, and lived out there for a few years too. So I think, you know, and then of course, you know, I had that opportunity to access public education. I went to the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh for my undergraduate degree. Mm-hmm. And really my access to that opportunity was through Pell Grants, was through VA benefits because my father was 100% service-connected veteran, and then was really through hard work and those summer jobs and opportunities that a kid can grasp if they want to. And I really appreciate the fact that, you know, now I'm a lawyer, I'm a small business owner, I work for as a Chapter 7 panel trustee for the Department of Justice administering bankruptcies and investigating fraud. And I think about the quality of life I have and how I got here. And I got here because the district invested in me as a child, and really, you know, I was afforded those opportunities, and I'm very concerned now. You know, as part of my professional life, I meet with families, working families, and small business owners, and I can really see the pressure and anxiety that they face. You know, working men and women whose wages are between, you know, $9 and $12 an hour, mm-hmm. where you have two working parents, high deductible health care, and no retirement savings, and then they have small children, and it's saying, how are they going to get to school? How are they going to get the 21st century skills to be competitive in the workplace and to grow our local economy? And I think Wisconsin fundamentals are that we make sure our elderly have dignity and that we make sure children have opportunities. And it's that balance of personal responsibility. I mean, obviously, you know, my roots are humble and I've worked my way through that, and it does take quite a bit of personal responsibility to do that. And, you know, highest and best use of resources. But the point is, we also have to have access to opportunity. And I'm really concerned, you know, that the current administration is really neglecting that understanding. And I have a very genuine firsthand account of the highest and best use for some of these public resources and the investment that we need to make in people, to be quite frank with you. And, you know, now my mother passed away last year, actually. July 12th was the one-year anniversary of her death, which happened to be the protest primary, the fake primary day. So that was kind of a interesting opportunity for me as a candidate and to revisit this whole election process. But my father's in a county nursing home. As a matter of fact, one of the best shining examples of county services in Winnebago County, and very happy with the service that he receives there. And I think it just shows, you know, the Winnebago County's commitment to making sure elderly individuals and seniors have dignity and security, and love to champion that. And I have a very true understanding of the role of that facility in my family's life and then all the other families that are served by that facility. So I think at this point, it's really about finding our vision and then protecting it. And you know, that's why what has drawn me to public service, because my district has given me a great benefit, and I want to make sure that that continues for our young people and our elderly. And so it's worth it to me. It's worth these discussions, and it's time to, you know, bring civility back to government, bring hard work back to government, and then remember that this is not just sound bites and inflammatory statements, that this is about real people getting us out of the recession, growing our local economy, and standing by our fundamentals that have made Wisconsin strong since its inception.
Your website talks a lot about the loss of the middle class in Wisconsin. So that's obviously what was a central part of your campaign. So, but let me ask you about some of the votes that Senator Hopper cast. He voted for the collective bargaining package. You would not have done that, the collective bargaining changes. You would not have voted for
that.
That's right. Why?
Well, I have experience as a local elected official. What I find is it was really an assault on local control of government decision making. It also created great disparity in the way certain sectors of public employees are treated, mm-hmm. which is definitely a morale problem, and definitely, you know, with the lack of notice, when you have a 144-page document set to be voted on in less than 5 business days without stakeholder input, it's very concerning to me. And I also believe that there may have been areas for reform with regard to collective bargaining in Wisconsin, but it was interesting that the proposal that was put on the table was not really vetted by organizations such as the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. And I believe a lot of the stakeholders, both in county, municipal, and school board administrators and leaders, were not consulted, were not asked to be part of the table in developing the legislation and then really understanding its impact. And it was really frustrating for me to be the deputy mayor of the 8th largest city in Wisconsin, to have that introduced so rapidly. And then the question came up about, does this jeopardize our federal transit funding? And in those first few days, we were seeing a loss of $1.5 million in federal transit money, and no one had an answer. And yet, supposedly, this was done to assist local governments, you know, develop their fiscal house and put it in order. And to have grave questions like that, that would have cut one half of Oshkosh's bus routes. So we would have gone from the 8th largest city having 9 bus routes, very effective mass transportation services that people are very dependent on, and reducing that to 4.
But that transit issue was kind of fixed in the budget bill.
It was.
So
eventually.
Communities like Oshkosh didn't lose the
It was eventually, but the tenor, how it went about, the lack of inclusion of stakeholders, and then the morale issues, and then just the other reality of my district is that there's quite a few individuals who self-identify as Republicans, who self-identify as independents, who are also public employees, and I think they felt an assault without even giving time to adjust. And this is going to be a dramatic hit in their disposable household incomes, which has an economic impact on our local economy and our small businesses. And in Winnebago County, which I don't have the whole county as part of my state senate district, but I have quite a significant portion of it, 1 out of 8 households in Winnebago County has a public employee family, has a member of the public employee person in that household. So, I think they really felt shut out of the process. They were very surprised. Individuals who did vote for Senator Hopper, did vote for Governor Walker, considered themselves Republicans. And I think for them, the whole process, how this went about, was very shocking to them. And I think people felt betrayed.
What about the, that deals with the collective bargaining elements, but mm-hmm. is it fair to make public employees, including the 1 in 8 in Winnebago, thank you for the fascinating stat, mm-hmm. is it fair to ask them to pay 5% towards their pension, 12% toward their health care?
Well, this is my opinion on this, is that it's really an issue of local control and understanding what elements of population you are dealing with, what classification of staff. And that's one of the great things about the collective bargaining units, is they were really organized based on type of occupation and experience and education. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see some great disparities. As much as I believe the current administration, would hold out the anomalies of the, you know, there's this one bus driver somewhere that made this incredible sum of money, or, oh, you want to hold out one teacher or a certain school district that has kind of a lopsided benefit structure depending on, you know, the progressive years of collective bargaining where something might have gotten off of balance. Mm-hmm. But then in comparison, in contrast to that, you know, I've been meeting with custodians and IT professionals and all of these other classifications of employee where you say, wait a minute, you know, we have janitors who have in good faith gone to the table for 26 years, believe it or not. I have one constituent that was telling me the story where their wages have gone from $10 an hour to $13 an hour after that many years of coming to the tables. Yes. And to say, now, how does that person contribute those percentages to their health care? And, you know, and then to see people then asking me for a bankruptcy consultation and saying, what am I going to do in August or September when this really hits my disposable income? And how can, you know, what is the benefit of that bargain? And I believe that people, you know, the right of contract is a fundamental right. And people, when they sit down at that table expecting, you know, this course of treatment over a number of years and then to suddenly be told, you no longer have the ability to sit at the table and we will no longer discuss with you this. And I think, you know, the shell that remains of the collective bargaining is very limited, does not have a good dispute resolution mechanism. You know, the management and labor can discuss up to CPI, but mm-hmm. what CPI? And then the final arbiter is management. And I think that's very disingenuous when and people have a lot of anxiety. So I'm not saying there isn't room for reform. I'm not going to suggest I know the what's the fair percentage. But I think the real point is the administration and the legislature just took a straight line approach to it. And the fabulous thing about local control is it can get into the little details and it can get into the nuances about what is important to one particular profession may not be important to the other. And there are trade-offs that local units of government and local entities can really then get the benefit of their bargain. And now they're forced to have this morale problem, uneven playing fields for certain classifications of employees. And I think what that's going to do is in the long run harm our ability to recruit and retain good people. And I think it has, you know, in the case of the custodian or the janitor or certain administrative assistants, maybe actually really put them in a place where it'll be very difficult to hire qualified people because the private sector, you know, is more competitive.
Is the first bill you're going to sponsor or co-sponsor going to take us back to the old collective bargaining system then?
You know, Senator? I don't know if that's the first. My fundamentals in taking my seat, being sworn in, my first order of business is really going to be to start with the stakeholder meetings, get back to the democratic fundamentals of how do we interact with people and what's the biggest concern. I don't, at this point, with the fallout of the implementation of this, I'm not even sure where to start. Mm-hmm. You know, and is the issue, well, now we have to restore certain pieces of these fundamental rights, you know, how do we build the bridge? And I think the other reality in the situation we're in right now is that I will be part of the minority Senate caucus and, you know, where are we going to really start out in September? But I do think there needs to be a place at the table for people. And I think in my district, when you define people, you are also saying public employees. And we have to restore their faith in government, their faith in representation, that they are being taken seriously and that, you know, they may no longer have the same collective bargaining rights they have, but they do have the right and access to me as their public servant.
As somebody who's just off the campaign trail with success, which of Senator Hopper's votes do you think hurt him the most with voters, for collective bargaining or for Governor Walker's budget, Senator?
I really believe it was the momentum of the extreme agenda. I think, you know, the collective bargain, the budget repair bill votes, you know, that obviously hurt him with a certain sector of constituent, which would be the public employee constituent.
Yes.
But then you get into the budget vote, and then you recognize that there's just a difference in priority where, you know, the contrast there was, well, do you really believe that creating this $2.3 billion in corporate tax giveaways versus fundamentally, you know, supporting our strong fundamentals and Wisconsin values of local school aid, and then making sure that we have dignity for seniors and that we don't create waiting lines with regard to family care,
mm-hmm.
Things like that, to say where is this money really going? And it also creates an unfair playing field for local small businesses in our economy. I can't tell you how much I hear this as a local elected person, you know, whenever we try to create a incentive financing scheme, even on a local level, the existing business owners say, hey, wait a minute. I've been here for decades. I've been making the investment. Where's my incentive? But I keep having to pay the tab, mm-hmm. and that's the frustration. So it's really interesting to me that we continue to try to offer these incentives and then realize we're not actually supporting the people that have made the fundamental investment to have their business here. And I think that's a piece of the story that's not talked about, and we really have to get back to tax fairness and saying, what is the vision? What are our priorities? What kind of jobs do we want to grow? And then how do you create this climate where we have shared sacrifice? And I think that term has been bandied about quite a bit, but there hasn't been a lot of transparency mm-hmm. right now about who is being asked to sacrifice and then who is being given the free ride. And as we go forward, I think we really have to set ourselves up to be transparent.
Do you think the results on August 9th in the 18th Senate District were more a rejection of Senator Hopper or a message for Governor Walker, Jessica?
Well, I think it's a combination. Senator Hopper was a first-term senator, and I think there's a lot to be learned about constituent services and making sure you're in the district and that we are having the open lines of communication and that people really do feel, yes, I'm receiving the constituent services and the representation that I expect out of a public servant. So I think there's a piece of the story there. And then the other part of it, though, really is the extreme agenda coming out of Madison. There were several, independent groups, as I did my canvassing and door knocking, people say, you know what, Jessica, I'm not a Democrat, but I'm concerned about people's access to the table and participation in government, and I'm also concerned about the pace of government, the lack of transparency, and quite frankly, I'm wondering if people are reading what they're passing, right? I mean, there's a lot of bills that were introduced, a lot of things that happened in a very short period of time. You know, obviously nobody wants gridlock government, but nobody wants high-speed rail government either. I mean, they want to be certain that the policies are sound. They want information to take away anxiety, and that's something they weren't given over the last 6 months. And even with the redistricting, voter ID, concealed carry, the other policy decisions as far as granting the governor administrative veto power over administrative agencies, and there's a lot of things that took place that we still don't understand the ramifications or impacts of legislation. And I think that said, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we need to slow things down and create the balance. And I think there was also an impact of what was happening on the federal level that gave people pause. And I think they said, wait a minute, we see what has just transpired in our Capitol, and we want there to be balance. And we want public servants to realize that they are held accountable and that this Wisconsin's recall provisions allow for that final check by citizens. And I think what they may have been reacting to is this idea that the executive branch and the legislative branch were not having that arm's length debate, and the transparency was gone. And so people then had that reaction of, well, where's the fourth check? And in Wisconsin, the fourth check is the recall provision mm-hmm. and the miscellaneous content of the Constitution that says, when people feel they're no longer being representative and they're not equal stakeholders in the process, they have the opportunity to execute their constitutional rights and choose their representative.
But your party had hoped to capture the Senate and fell just short. At the moment, with two Democrats up next week, it's 17-16.
Right.
Was it still a victory for you and one other Democrat to win and not knock out a GOP senator?
I believe it is a victory, and I believe I've already, in the last few days, it seems as if the tone and the pace of government is already seemingly changing. And I think as we see more public servants coming out with interviews about how they wish to proceed, and also more public expressions by constituents of get back in the sandbox, get to work, we have to get out of the recession, and we're not going to be able to do that if government is polarized.
Well, one of those saying that is Governor Walker, saying he welcomed a new opportunity to work with Democrats like yourself. Do you believe he's really willing to compromise and truly work with Democrats such as yourself?
Well, the proof will be in the pudding in September. And I'm trying to recognize that too, that there is a need for civility in government, but there's also a need for honest discussion. There's a need to make sure we're including people in the political process, and we have to get back to the table and we have to start working. And there's nothing wrong with disagreeing. It's how you go about the disagreement and how you go about the discussion. And I think what we saw in February was really a breakdown of those fundamental principles about transparency and time, and getting your opportunity to dissent and be thorough about it, but being given that opportunity. And part of the role of the minority in the legislature is really to offer that alternative. You know, the majority offers their solution, the minority brings up its points and its alternative, and then there's a role for citizens to say, well, maybe there's a compromise here. And there was a complete breakdown of that process in February, and then it continued. And so I consider this the caution.
Would you have left the state like the 14 other Senate
Democrats?
I've
been asked this question before, and I continue to say I will not Monday morning quarterback that.
Okay.
Because interesting times create those interesting solutions, and I think there'll be plenty of time for me in my future as a public servant to earn my stripes or earn my negatives. And what I'm hoping to do is to, you know, be sworn in and get to work. And, you know, I've had to take my lumps as a local elected official. I've had to take tough votes. You know, there's quite a documented record there with some very challenging public decisions. But the great thing about being a local elected official is that I'm bound, or have been bound for two terms, by a lot of the local government transparency rules that are very different for the state legislature. So I've had to really explain my votes and to really show my work, as I think an elementary teacher would say, is how did I come to my conclusion? And what I found is there's quite a few people that don't agree with me all the time, but they respect the research, they respect my delivery, and they at least understand why I voted the way I did. And so having that background as a local elected official, I think will serve me well, and I think will allow me to really provide a good example of that caliber of representative, because I think the way some of the systems work in Madison, people are really confused, and I think there's not enough sunlight and transparency in the decision making. And I think if you're a public servant, you have to be able to defend your votes.
In the wake of the August 9th results, the state Democratic chairman said it's on to the effort to gather 540,208 signatures to recall Governor Walker. Will you play a lead effort in gathering those signatures, Senator?
I don't know what that, you know, lead effort, it's a big statement. I think what's going to happen is we need to see what happens in September. And I'm the first to say, when people ask me, what about these recalls, were they necessary? What happened with the collective bargaining policy? You know, should elected official be punished for one vote? And then that's when I remind people, the recall elections were not necessarily about the vote. You know, the idea that in January the governor did not sit down with the collective bargaining units, did not begin that initial effort of good, what I consider good faith bargaining, you know, mm-hmm. the actual sitting at the table, presenting the economic crisis, asking for the concession, you know, that's what was really expected in traditional course of collective bargaining. And since those things didn't happen, and then the budget repair bill was introduced in emergency, and it kind of created a state of emergency within our society, caused a lot of anguish, anxiety, nervousness, the demonstrations, the Capitol was flooded, it was mm-hmm. shut down, the legislative hotline was shut down, the doors were closed. I mean, this is Wisconsin, yeah. You know? And so I, too, though, am bound by the same good faith idea that when I am impaneled, we need to work together. He's making this approach mm-hmm. about working together, and he needs to follow up on that. And
so you plan to take him at his word, the governor at his word.
Well, if he's offering civility, we as a state need to heal, but he needs to be transparent, and he needs to get back to these fundamental democratic principles. And you know, if he refuses to do that, and if this is a lip service opportunity mm-hmm. to say one thing and do the other, the people will hold him accountable.
I understand. Yeah. Unions spent tens of million dollars to elect Democrats like you. Do you feel you owe unions anything as a result of that spending?
You know what? I have zero control over that spending, and one of the big frustrations as a candidate now is independent expenditure spending. In my race in particular, there was quite a few ads on both sides of the political spectrum, whether they were supporting me or attacking me, that I think are disingenuous. You know, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covered some of the oddities of the attack ads, and then, it's frustrating. It's frustrating. I don't feel beholden. I think in the end of the day, what my job is to be a public servant, and I think I've been very clear about my stance regarding the rights of public employees to have a seat at the table. I mean, Oshkosh was one of the cities in Wisconsin that actually passed a resolution by a vote of 5-1 to request that the collective bargaining changes be taken out of the budget repair bill. So I think I was very, very clear and forward in that position. So I'm assuming that's why they're supporting me, because they appreciate my prior acts, in this effort to include, allow public employees to have participation rights in the decisions in their workplace.
What issues do you expect to have to vote on over the next 12 months? The governor and Tony Evers are drafting some alternative estate new plan to replace No Child Left Behind. There's a mining bill that might be out there. What other issues do you expect to perk to the surface?
At this point, my focus is going to be doing these constituent stakeholders meetings in my district, and I believe I will get an earful. And I think a lot of them will be about local control. A lot of the, municipalities, units of government, school boards, entities like that, I think they have been very restricted over the last few months about their abilities to exercise any type of discretion, have any kind of vision, and what's their seat at the table. And I really hope to champion some of those issues and restoring some of those abilities, because I'm a big believer in the collaborative approach of government. If we're actually going to dig out of this and become more efficient and produce a higher and better product for citizens in Wisconsin, we really need to have an intergovernmental cooperation, and I think it's really been broken. And also, when you look to previous documents such as the Kettle Commission, mm-hmm. And look at some of the very good ideas that are in there and that do respect Wisconsin values, but also say, what's our 21st century approach? In Wisconsin, we have 72 counties, and each county seat is a day's ride by horse. Yeah. And then that's become the administrative arm of our mandates. And then yet you see these unique opportunities where counties and certain levels of government have collaborated to provide services more efficiently and at a reduced rate to the taxpayer. That's the kind of stuff I want to work on. So,
well, just two final questions. The governor's budget bill said we're going to have to cut MA spending by about $450 million. But the Secretary of Health Services is just going to file a statement with the ledge in terms of how that's going to be cut. Do you think we're to balance a budget, we're going to have to cut $450 million out of MA? Obviously a program that you're familiar with,
right.
Some parts of it.
I think it's short-sighted. I think it will have long-term consequences. And I'm very concerned about the power that's given to certain individuals to make those decisions without the inclusion of communities and people. And I think we really have to, my role as a public servant, again, is to provide that transparency and to provide that story and to say, what are the consequences of cuts? Mm-hmm. Because we don't really want to be short-sighted, and we want to make sure that's life and death, those decisions. It's not just a number on a spreadsheet. It's not something easy. And I think that at least there needs to be transparency about how the cuts are decided. And I think that's why I'm concerned about this new way of handling those decisions. I think people are being shut out of the process again.
And then my last question speaks to the partisan nature of the Capitol. And I talked to a Republican Party leader who said this: Jessica King is just renting the district because the way we have redrawn it in 2012, she's not going to get reelected. I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Well, my response to that question is that it's really about public service. And I have the next 14 months to really show what a great job a public servant can do for their people. And if this constituents aren't happy with my work ethic and they're not happy with my straightforward government and what I do for them, well, then maybe I don't deserve to get elected. But I really don't think it's about the redistricting. And to be quite fair, I think the redistricting was very modest in the 18th State Senate district. I did have an addition of a township, but I'm excited to serve them. So
you're looking forward to being sworn in here in a couple weeks?
Yes.
As the senator from the 18th
yes,
district.
I am.
Jessica King, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having
Welcome
me.
Welcome in a few days to the Senate.
I'm excited.
Thank you.
Thanks.